أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء، على سيدنا وحبيبنا محمد بن عبد الله، وعلى آله وصحابته ومن تبعهم ولا. الحمد لله، لا علم إلا ما علمتنا، إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا، وانفعنا بما علمتنا، وزدنا علما، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. When I saw the topic of this session, the first thing that I did was I went to look at a dictionary for both the Arabic and the English of tolerance, because I wanted to, whenever I see something in English, I like to see how the Arabs would say it, because the language of the Arabs is the language of the Quran, or the language of Quran is the language of the Arabs. And when you see how the Arabs say something, it usually will tell you a lot about what that thing is. And when I looked at tolerance, what I realized is that there isn't really a word in Arabic that defines tolerance as it's understood in the West. And the reason for that is the Arabs are much more specific about their words than the Ajam. And this is why in the Arabic language, the word ajam comes from a word that means not able to speak very well or at all. So if you look at the dictionaries, and I looked at a few of them, they generally say tasamuh or ihtimal. And I don't think either of those really fit properly into what the intention of the person who actually, or committee or group of people that gave this topic its title. And so I want to look a little bit at what tolerance means in the West and how we can apply that to our understanding from an Islamic perspective. As you know, tolerance is not something that is historically very prevalent in the West. And I say this as somebody who comes from a Christian background, on two sides of the family, Orthodox and Catholic. And although the Orthodox and the Catholics were very intolerant in history, we didn't really have religious wars in our family. But there was an understanding about the history of Christianity that I came to, and that was the realization that the Christians in the past were very intolerant of dissent. In fact, they burned people at the stake who dissented from the dominant church. The church split into three segments: the Catholic, which is the universal church, which was dominant in the West, the Orthodox, which was the church of the East, and then the Coptic church, which is in Egypt. And I actually attended recently a program in which there were some Coptic priests there, and in fact the head of the Coptic church was there, Baba Shnuda. And what I was struck by was the fact that here are these Coptic priests and their pope that after 1400 years of Islam in Egypt were visiting America and were being honored by the Egyptian embassy in their visit, something that some of the Muslim embassies wouldn't do for a visiting Muslim scholar. In fact, sometimes we think perhaps that the Muslims have become more tolerant at the state level for other religions than they have for Islam itself. In fact, if you look at some of the Muslim countries, we have countries where the hijab is not tolerated, but a woman to dress like a secular Western woman is tolerated. And an example of that is Turkey, and we're going to have a sister from Turkey who was thrown out of the parliament, even though she was democratically elected, because she wore a hijab. So there's no tolerance in the Muslim world now for just practicing Islam. So like my brother Ustad Anwar said, is that sometimes we actually become too tolerant about the wrong things and not intolerant enough about the right things. So if you look at the history of Christianity, it's a history that had a lot of splits and divisions. And at a certain point, something very significant happened, which is the Protestant Reformation, and the Christians began to have massive wars. Protestants versus Catholics. This led in the 17th century to a 30 years war, in which in some areas over a third of the Christian populations were wiped out completely. Also the English Civil War. Now at that time, some interesting characters arose. One of them was Thomas Hobbes. And he introduces ideas that the Muslims had known about for centuries, but the Christians really hadn't known about. The idea of not having religion have an impact on the state. And this is crystallized in the thought of a British philosopher, John Locke, who wrote a treatise called A Treatise on Toleration. And Locke, lest any of you think that he's not a significant person and that my mentioning him here is not relevant to this topic, Locke is one of the key ideologues behind the founding of the United States of America. And all of these founding fathers were deeply steeped in the ideas of John Locke. Now, John Locke believed that the problem with religion is when it impinges on the state. And so he devised a solution to separate state authority and religious authority. And so he said, and this is important because John Locke, when the King of England was brought over from the mainland, one of the people who had fled persecution in England, who was in his entourage, was John Locke. So he was next to the power nexus in England. This man, John Locke, said that what we need to do is reduce religion to the private sector. And this is what Carver in this country called God as a hobby. Allow people to have religion as a hobby, but don't allow their religion to impact the society. So we leave religion to the private sector, and it's upon the state to tolerate various religious understandings. In other words, the state, in giving the religious freedom, it demands from religion that it relinquish any interference with state policy. And this is the beginning of the separation of state and church in the West. Now, from that doctrine comes the idea that you can't really say anybody's wrong, because everybody has a right to his opinion. And this is something that the Americans actually believe is rooted in Americanism. That I have a right to my own opinion. Now, what has this led us to? Because I want to look at the word in English, tolerance, in the dictionary. It says a noun, recognition of and respect for opinion, practices, or behavior of others. Opinion, practices, or behavior of others. Two, amount of a variation from a standard that is allowed. Which is a very interesting definition. The amount of variation from a standard that is allowed. In other words, the tolerance is in a sense a continuum, but at a certain point, you go beyond the pale, as they say in English, and something is no longer tolerable. Now, in the United States of America, this country is split. And we're in this country. We're not somewhere else. We're here. This country is split on certain key issues. For instance, the death penalty. And I think personally that every Muslim should be against the death penalty in this country.
And I think it's foolish for Muslims to speak highly of the death penalty in this country. Because you cannot have a death penalty in a country in which the majority of people on death row are people that could not afford lawyers. Because if you can afford a good lawyer in this country, you will not end up on death row. Which means there's a problem in the legal system. Because Islam has a death penalty, but it also has the right of the people of blood of the family to forgive somebody who has killed a member of their family. That is a right in Islam, which in a sense would solve the split in this country between those for the death penalty and those against. If you're for it, then you can demand the blood of somebody who took the life of your loved one. And if you're against that, if you're against the death penalty, you can forgive that person. That is the solution to this crisis. But the point is, this country is split on the death penalty. Some people tolerate it and others don't. It's split on abortion. Since Roe versus Wade, there have been over 40 million aborted fetuses in this country. 40 million aborted fetuses in this country. That is a Holocaust that nobody talks about. There's no memorial in Washington for all of those unborn children. There's no memorial. But we're supposed to tolerate this because this is the right for somebody to do what they want to their body. And yet we have laws against suicide in this country. You can't kill yourself. It's illegal to kill yourself, but you can kill something, a life in your stomach, in your womb. These are the inherent contradictions of the legal system in this country. And it's a system that is in deep crisis. And it's a system that the Muslims, if we, in a sense, had the scholars that were at the level of understanding the issues of this time, and there are so few in the Muslim world, that had the language and the understanding of our Islamic law, those people would be able to show where this system has gone wrong and how Islam can rectify what has gone wrong. Because there's much in this country that Islam would not throw out. But there are elements in this country that definitely Islam would not tolerate. So if you look at the idea of accepting something up to a point, and then another is the permissible deviation from a specified value of a structural dimension, capacity to withstand pain or hardship. But this last one I thought was very interesting. Physiological resistance to poison. Now, if you've studied medicine, you know that we have in medicine what's called drug tolerance. You can also become tolerant to a poison, like alcohol, which is a poison. A person who drinks a good deal of alcohol will eventually become more and more tolerant, and the threshold reaches higher and higher levels. So it takes more alcohol to get them drunk. But the body has developed a tolerance. It does not mean the body's not being poisoned by it. The body will eventually be destroyed by it. And this is the type of toleration that exists in this country. It is a type of toleration that will ultimately kill the social body. Because it's tolerating things that are intolerable. You cannot say that it is something that should be tolerated when homosexuals can adopt children and raise them in their homes. That is beyond the pale. It's a variation that has gone past what is acceptable. And this is something Muslims have to speak out against. Among many other issues, riba, usury. You cannot tolerate usury. It's not something the Muslim can tolerate. The Muslims have to speak out against these things. And this is Amr bin Ma'ruf and Nahi an al-Munkar. If you see in a book that your children who go to these schools, you'll find a book, and in the book it says, a math book, and the math problem that the children get is, John borrows $100 from the bank at 14% interest. And then the basic problem will be how you find out how much he owes at the end of the year in interest. There's an assumption in that word problem that this is fine. Now, if a Muslim found in a book at the school that his child was in eighth grade that said that so-and-so slept with his mother and this and that, in some kind of a word problem, he would be disgusted. And yet the Prophet ﷺ said that usury was like that. In other words, the metaphysical reality of usury was similar to that. So we should be disgusted by seeing something like that in a book, because that is propaganda. It's preparing the next generation to enter into a system that is inherently intolerable and wrong. And this is the role of the Muslims in every place that they go to. But we have lost a sense of our historical role. As Muslims, we have lost a sense of our historical role, of what we are doing, what we're supposed to be doing in this country. And many of us are so afraid to speak out against what is wrong. But the Muslim voice is a voice that needs to be heard. And it can be heard in this country because we've reached numbers that are being recognized daily now in their newspapers. We're being to see the impact of the Muslim society in this country and recognize, people, that you are a historical community. You are a historical community in the United States of America, and history makers are often unaware of the fact that they're in the process of making history. There are Muslims in this country that don't realize that history is being made right now in the United States of America, because we have begun to impact this culture. They're writing about us, they're talking about us. Some of them are interested and others are worried. But we should not allow this opportunity to go by. Now, in terms of the idea of tolerance from an Islamic perspective, That's from a perspective here. From an Islamic perspective, there are certain words in Arabic that I think fit the idea that is trying to be conveyed. One of them is the idea of insaf, which is a type of unbiased disinterestedness. That you look at something without a bias. You look at it and you accept it. As an individual, if somebody tells you something, before you condemn it or make a judgment, you attempt to understand it. And this is something that is part of our usul. Part of the usul of the Muslims, the methodology of the Muslims, is to understand what your interlocutor, the person that you're speaking with, is actually saying. Before you condemn what he says, you have to understand what he says. And this is why listening is part of the Muslim character. If you do not listen attentively, the Quran, when it speaks to us, it tells us to listen attentively. If you do not listen attentively to the person that you're speaking to, then you won't be able to understand what they're saying. Now, one of the things that happens in this country is that when Muslims sit down to speak, we're often speaking different languages because of the countries we come from, the backgrounds we come from. And this is an opportunity for shaitan and other forces to come between us. The verse that the brother quoted, لَا تَسْتَوِي الْحَسَنَةُ وَلَا سَيِّئَةُ, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, وَإِمَّا يَنْزِغَنَّكَ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ نَزْغٌ فَاسْتَعِذْ بِاللَّهِ, if a nazgh from shaitan should afflict you, then seek refuge in Allah. What is a nazgh? Nazgh is دُخُولُ فِي أَمْرٍ لِإِفْسَادِهِ, according to the Arabs. It's to put something into something in order to corrupt it, to pervert it. And this is something that happens when we're speaking. We always have to remember, as individuals, as Muslims, when we speak to each other, we have to speak to each other knowing that we have an enemy that is waiting to bring something between us, a wedge. We have to be aware of that. And if we're not aware of that, then the havoc that's wreaked by those forces in the world, we see everywhere now. We see them everywhere. So it's important for Muslims to understand we have to have insaf. We have to have insaf when we look at this country. When the Prophet ﷺ spoke about the ruler of Najashi, Najashi was the ruler of Al-Habasha, he said that he was a just ruler, that people weren't oppressed in his land. That was a man who was not implementing Sharia. He was a Christian. And he actually sent his companions to live in that country because there was justice in that country. And in his country, which was Arabia, the Quraysh, were not treating his people with justice. So he sent them to a non-Muslim ruler who became Muslim, but he was a non-Muslim ruler, and he said that he was a just man. The Quran, when it speaks about Bani Israel, and Bani Israel right now is an easy target for the Muslims. We can shoot arrows at that bullseye all day long. But the truth is, we can also shoot arrows at the Muslims. We can shoot arrows at the Muslim rulers who have done similar things in their own countries, who have massacred large numbers of Muslims. So before you attack somebody else, you have to look at yourself. The Quran says, when it talks about the people of the book, وَمِنْ أَهْلِ الْكِتَابِ مَنْهُ بِقِنْطَارًا يُوَدِّهِ إِلَيْكَ. There are from people of the book, if you give them a vast amount of money, they'll be trustworthy. وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْهُ بِدِنَارًا لَا يُوَدِّهِ إِلَيْكَ. And there's among them those who, if you give them a small amount of money, they won't be trustworthy. That verse is insaf. It's saying from the people of the book, there are just, upright people in their commercial transactions, and then there's others that aren't. That is insaf. That is the way we have to look at the people that we're dealing with out there. There are many people in this country, there are Jewish people that have become Muslim. There are many Jewish people in this country that don't realize what's going on in Palestine, nor do they realize what Islam is because we haven't told them. And I personally believe that Islam could spread in large numbers amongst Jewish people in this country. I believe that. So we have to separate between what a group of people do and between the entire group of people. Because there are hadiths that indicate the essential enmity and animosity of Bani Israel towards the Muslims, but there are other hadiths and other verses of the Quran that indicate that they're not all covered under those ayahs and those verses. And we know for a fact that we have a history of Jews and Christians living in the Muslim lands under just circumstances, contributing to the Muslim societies. But we're living in dark times, and we have to be aware of the times that we're living in and understand the nature of the times. Islam is a religion that teaches people to be intelligent. It teaches us to think and to deliberate before we act. And this is where we're lacking. The Muslims are lacking in strategic planning. We're lacking in strategic planning. We don't think in long term. We're people that get angry easily. And then our anger subsides and little is done. It's better to be cool-headed in the face of a tribulation and then to act in a way that will benefit the situation, not in a way that will make it worse or won't change it at all. This is something that the Muslims have to realize. We have to realize as a community and a people that we have to stop being emotional. We have to stop shouting. We have to stop screaming. The demonstrations that we do have very little effect the way that they're done. They alienate more than they educate. If you want to win people over to your side and your understanding, then the vast majority of people are level-headed. And if they see that you're level-headed and that you're presenting the facts as they are, not hiding them, not whitewashing them. Because we have skeletons in our history. We have persecution in our history. We've done things that we should be ashamed of as Muslims. But that in no way taints the truth of our teaching. Because you cannot take a teaching and look at what the students of that teaching do and say that is must be from the teaching. It's not fair. Because sometimes students don't understand the lesson. Sometimes they got it wrong. They didn't understand what the teacher was saying, and they go out and they do something that ends up disgracing the teacher. We have to look at the seerah of our Prophet ﷺ, at how he dealt with people, at how he dealt with the Jews, at how he dealt with the Christians, at how he dealt with the Bedouin. Because the Bedouin is an archetype of ignorance. And the toleration of the Prophet ﷺ in the light of Bedouin is extraordinary. And we have many beautiful examples of that, and most of you know them. But there's no harm in mentioning one or two, because any time we mention Al-Habib, the heart should yearn to be in the presence of the Beloved. Our Prophet ﷺ was once giving out some wealth, and there was a desert Arab, Arabi. And the Prophet gave him quite a bit, and he said, أَحْسَنْتُ? Did I do an ihsan, some good to you? And he said, لَا وَلَا أَجْمَلْتُ. Not only didn't you do good, it wasn't hasan, it wasn't jameel either, which is less than hasan. So the sahaba wanted to kill this man. And the Prophet ﷺ told them, as they got up to beat him up, the Prophet said, kufu. He told them, just leave him alone. He went into his house, and the Bedouin, when he came out later, he was with him, and he gave him some more. And he said, Ahsantu ilayk, did I do good to you? He said, Ahsanta wa ajmalta, jazakallahu an ahlin wa ashira khaira. You did not only good, but it was beautiful, and may Allah reward you for your family and your clan. And the Prophet said, my sahaba found something in their heart with what you said, so won't you go out and tell them what you said to me just now? And he said, I would do that. So when they went out, the Prophet ﷺ said, yesterday this happened and you all got upset. And he said, but today what do you say? Did I do good to you? And the man said, indeed you did. And then he praised him. And that thing left the hearts of the sahaba. The Prophet ﷺ then gave an example. He said, I'm like somebody, if you look at a man who has camels, he knows his camels, and he goes and he tries to bring his camel, but other people run and scare the camel even more, chase it away. He said, had they done it with gentleness, they would have brought that camel in. And this is the nature of guidance. This man was astray, and I brought him back to guidance. If you do what you do, you will send people further astray. And in many ways, this is what we have become as a community. We have become a hujjah. Not for Islam, but against Islam. We have become a hujjah not for Islam, but against Islam. We have to be aware of that as individuals in particular. There's not a whole lot that we can do in other places. But each one of us can be an example, and that's what we have to do. And we have to remember also in closing that the Prophet ﷺ told us, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, وَجَعَلْنَا بَعْضُكُمْ لِبَعْضٍ فِتْنًا أَتَصْبِرُونَ. We made some of you a tribulation for others. Will you show patience? Will you show patience? Because that is another aspect of tolerance, is the ability to bear pain and hardship. To bear pain and hardship. وَجَعَلْنَا بَعْضُكُمْ لِبَعْضٍ فِتْنَةً أَتَصْبِرُونَ وَكَانَ رَبُّكَ بَصِيرًا. Your Lord sees everything. He sees when you're patient and when you're not. And patience is in the first slap, not in the second. Patience is when the tribulation first occurs. That's real patience. So we're told in the Quran that some of us are a tribulation for others, and then we're asked a question by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is istifham inkari in the Arabic language. It's a question that is refuted in the question. This is not an example of that. Atasbirun, will you be patient? This is istifham. It's a question from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Will you be patient? Will you show patience to your Lord? Sa'di, the Persian poet, said, what would you say if you were invited to a banquet by the Lord of the worlds. And you went to that banquet. And you went into this huge banquet hall and you saw all these other guests that were invited to the same banquet by the Lord of the worlds. He said, how would you treat those guests? And then he said in his poem, Sa'di knows that every soul on this earth was invited here by the Lord of the worlds to share in the banquet of life. This is the way we should look at the earth. We should look at the earth as everyone on it is a guest of God. And there are some guests that misbehave. There are some guests that do terrible things. There are some guests that soil the house. There are some guests that wreak havoc in the house. But they're all guests of the same generous Lord. And all of them have the potential and the ability to rectify their state, to make tawbah to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, ma lam yugharghir, as long as their throat has not felt the ruh about to leave it. So we should have patience as long as we're here. And I believe that all of the tribulations that are happening in the Muslim world right now, we should reflect deeply on these tribulations. And first and foremost, like my brother said, turn here. Because this is the only change that you as an individual can enact initially. But that change, we cannot underestimate the profound impact of that change. We can never underestimate the profound impact of the change of each individual. And so, above all, we should be intolerant to those qualities in our own selves that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala dislikes, and to be tolerant of those very same qualities in those around us, knowing that they're in a state of tribulation. أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم.
تكبير تكبير الله.